Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. I am Ed Mallion, and alongside me I have the Chief Sports Writer of The Independent, Jonathan Liu.
Hello.
And, not to mention, the London Football Correspondent of The Independent, Jack Pitbrook.
Is that a new job title?
Well, what is your technical job title?
Football Reporter, I think is what it says on my contract.
Well, you know, we can always change these things. The way I see it, you are our top man in London, ahead of Miguel and Johnny. And thus, you were at the Northumberland Derby yesterday. I guess that's a perfect segue.
I was, yeah. I was not expecting that at all. I thought that Tottenham would win because of how good they were against Chelsea last weekend. But I thought Arsenal did to them what Tottenham usually do to Arsenal, in the sense that often in these North London derbies, like, Arsenal might be able to win with quality, but it's Tottenham who overwhelm them with physical energy and pressing and attention to detail and tactical ingenuity. Whereas the shoe was on completely the other foot yesterday. It was Arsenal who pressed more intensely from the start, who were more tactically flexible. They started playing one way with a 3-4-3, then changed at half time to a 3-4-1-2, then changed to a back four, I think, towards the end of the second half. And Arsenal was so much more kind of meticulous and focused and organised and disciplined in a way that you're not used to seeing in these games. And they completely caught Tottenham off guard.
Can a shoe be completely on the other foot? If there's only, I mean, there's only 2 feet, right?
The Zapato was on the other PA in this case.
Yeah. I nearly said, yeah, on the other absolute foot.
The shoe was completely on the other foot, I guess. Anyway, it's a minor point. What great game it was.
I really enjoyed it for a start. I would say Spurs, like, leading at half-time was a bit of a full scoreline in the first place, but sometimes you need that in a game, because what it means is the other team that's been dominant has to come out and be more dominant. They have to play more. And there were some good goals. There were some good substitutions, I thought, from Unai Emery. Yeah, I think that's what... most of the praise, I don't know how much you guys have read, but from what I've read, most of the praise for yesterday has kind of ended up landing on Unai Emery's doorstep rather than anyone else.
Well, in the words of Disraeli was, great statesman from the 19th century. He often said, "When I want to read a novel, I write one," which is why he wrote terrible novels. But anyway, when I want to read an analysis, I write one.
So Johnny's saying he's better than anyone else there. You can actually find out if that's true at the FSF Awards tonight, where Johnny and Jack are both too humble to know that they've been nominated for, what is it, Writer of the Year, Football Writer of the Year?
Yeah. So Johnny and I are both up for Writer of the Year. On a shortlist with Barney Rone of The Guardian, Jonathan Northcroft of The Sunday Times, John Nicholson of Football 365, and Susie Rack of, I think, The Guardian. But the thing is, it's a vote, and unfortunately, Johnny
that involves people.
Yeah, and Johnny and I have been, I think, probably too. We think that it's vulgar to run an electioneering campaign, which it is. Unfortunately, this means we're almost certainly going to get beaten by somebody who has been electioneering for it hard, at which point we're kind of left in the position of thinking, well, maybe we should have pushed harder for votes, but on the other hand, we can retain the kind of moral high ground. And actually, this very podcast is in the same position, because the Indie Football Podcast is shortlisted for Podcast of the Year, which we're delighted about. And fans, thank you so much for everyone who's voted for us.
But we should have mentioned this on the pod.
Yeah,
really.
We should have done.
We should have mentioning it now.
Are we mentioning it now? It's a bit late, though. It's tonight, and possibly even...
By the time most people have listened to
by
this,
the time most
we
people
will
have
already not
lost.
Won the award. Yeah.
What I'm really surprised about is why the Ballon d'Or has chosen to go up against the Football Supporters Federation Awards on the same evening. Because I'm sure that, like, how's Luka Modric going to know which one to go to?
Well, you know, if you wanted more proof that FIFA is absolutely screwed, I think we've just seen it. And as you said, we probably won't win the award tonight because we haven't tried to get votes. We appreciate some people, you know, they need the votes for the validation. We're very happy with what we're doing.
awards come and go, the brand is priceless.
Yeah, absolutely, as Russell once said. So the North London Derby, after that brief, very self-centred interlude, Spurs were really bad, and it was a good... The thing is, for Spurs, they had basically had three really big games in a week. They had the Chelsea game, where I think they surprised everyone by how good they were. They had the Inter game that you were at, Johnny, mm-hmm. where they had to win.
Yeah.
And they did. And then there's this letdown at the end. So, you know, two out of three ain't bad. Yeah. But this was a step back. I mean, there's still... Do you still think they're going to finish above Arsenal this season?
Well, I think this was very clearly, and Pochettino admitted this afterwards, a knock-on effect from the games they played last Saturday against Chelsea and then on Wednesday against Inter Milan. He said that they were feeling a little bit tired in their legs, especially after they went 3-2 down. They couldn't find that extra gear. And you notice that those three performances have got successively worse. The Chelsea performance was obviously brilliant. And while they went into half-time in the lead, it was... not a great sort of 0-90 minute performance from them. They have started a lot of games quite well. I think they've scored a lot more first half goals than they have second half goals. Arsenal have been the opposite actually this season. They've come very strong in the second half. I think they scored more second half goals than it, even Manchester City. But this time, whether it was, you know, that they knew that Spurs were going to be a little bit weary, they really hit them hard from the very first minute and took control of the game quite early on.
I also think Arsenal were very good at exposing Spurs' bad players, and yesterday was one of those games where the badness of like half the Spurs team could not be covered up by their good players. So like Aurier was disastrous and Arsenal exposed him so many times in the first half. Davis was almost as bad. Arsenal exposed him a lot. And then in the
one really good block from Davis,
admittedly, but more bad things than good. And Sissoko and Dier in midfield, like neither of them, if we're honest, are very good midfielders, and Torreira and Xhaka were all over them, and that meant that Eriksen couldn't really get in the game, and I can't really remember seeing Eriksen as uninfluential as he was yesterday. And it was one of those games where you realise the limitations that Spurs' squad has put on Pochettino, and how, you know, he can't keep getting the absolute most out of those players week after week after week, because the players just aren't good enough.
Is Eric Dier Phil Jones post-plastic surgery?
Play centre back, play right back, play defensive midfield.
Is he remains Phil Jones?
Quite possible. I mean,
He's not. He's better. He's better than that. He's more reliable. He's more consistent. He doesn't get injured as much. He's probably not as powerful as Jones. Like Jones used to be could have been a very like exciting, powerful defender at one point, but he's not a great player. Like the fact is, Spurs' best, I mean, putting Eriksen out the picture because Eriksen played slightly forward, Spurs' best midfielder by an absolute mile is still Moussa Dembélé, and Moussa Dembélé is kind of finished.
Yeah, Dembélé is finished. We're excluding Dele Alli and Eriksen from this.
Right, yeah, yeah. Because in terms of the people who play in front of the defence.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like Sissoko and Dier, come on.
Dier is... I think Dier is playing below his level. I don't think this is his level. If you look at, for example, the...
What's his actual best position? Like, if you were putting a team around Eric Dier, which is a horrifying thought, where would you put him, though, in that team?
Well, I'd put him in front of the defence.
So, like, he'd be a lone holding midfielder with two guys ahead of him?
Yeah, but it does depend on the system, and it does depend on the sort of... the sort of football that you want to play. I don't think you can play through him. He's not a Jorginho type player. But if you put him in front of the defence with against a side that you're expecting to attack you pretty hard, his reading of the game is generally quite good. What I think he's missing at the moment is he's not quite as sharp as he normally is. If you see that fourth goal where he tries to dive in and cut out, yeah, that's a player who. Who knows what his limits are, but isn't quite. He knows what he's capable of, but isn't quite being able to execute it at the moment.
I think it's very telling that Mourinho tried to sign him the summer before last, and I mean,
as an upgrade on Phil Jones.
Well, I think he would probably have played him in holding midfield, and I think that he can play. I think he could play holding midfield for United very easily because it's not, you know, United wouldn't try and build up through him. He would just have. It would just be a case of, you know, interpreting orders. Blocking in the right position, doing what Fabian Delph would call the basics of football. Whereas
the basics of
why are we taking Fabian Delph's philosophy as the baseline for football now?
Because I'm just inspired by that amazing speech he made in All or Nothing. But
positionally, Eric Dyer is very good.
Yeah, he is very good, and that's why he would have been. The point I'm trying to make clumsily is that he could play defensive midfield for a Mourinho type team, but he's not technically good enough to play defensive midfield for a Manchester City or Chelsea type team. And if Tottenham are like being ambitious and expansive, then they're trying to be more like City than they are like United. They're trying to play expansive passing football that moves the ball forward quickly. And I don't think Dyer is technically good enough to play that role for Spurs.
He might be getting a run of defence with Vertonghen now suspended, Davinson Sanchez still injured, Juan Foyth looking a little bit
question marks over Alderweireld's future.
Yeah. So essentially, they got Foyth and Alderweireld in defence. Those are their only two available central defenders at the moment
for the new camp.
Foyth is ineligible. He's not in the Champions League squad, so that's going to have to be Vertonghen and Alderweireld for the new camp.
Okay.
Yeah, but and that's even if he wants to play, you know, two central defenders. If he wants to play three, then Dyer kind of has to play.
I think that Spurs' best football in the Pochettino era was in 2016-17 when they played with a back three, two wing backs pushing up, and then Ali and Eriksen in behind Kane. That is their best football. The problem is that
I disagree.
Well, you're wrong. The problem is that the wing backs are now not good enough to really justify playing that attacking system. So they're left playing two centre backs. But I still think the team looks better with three centre backs than with two, as in with Dyer, Alderweireld, and Vertonghen rather than a back four. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I mean qualitatively playing the three at the back with Dyer slotting in between the two central defenders isn't markedly different from what they're doing with Dyer slotting in a four at the back. I just think that Tottenham's best 11 contains Son because I think that is
now true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to say so, right?
Arsenal fans are a famously understanding bunch, but we haven't really gone into how well they played, and I think we might be hearing about it if we don't. So, what struck you most about this Arsenal team compared to so much of the late Wenger Arsenal that you had to endure?
Firstly, the physical intensity, which you would never really get from Arsenal. That was incredibly impressive. The way they tore into Spurs in the first half hour. They could have been like 3 or 4 nil up before Spurs scored those two goals and came back into it. So that's number one. Number two is the tactical flexibility. First half, 3-4-3 with Kolasinac on one side and Bellerin on the other side, getting up and down, trying to get in behind the Tottenham fullbacks with great success. Second half, 3-4-1-2 with Lacazette and coming on to play up front with Aubameyang and Aaron Ramsey playing as a number 10, and Ramsey was involved with two of the goals. So it's two completely different
one bad pass that you got lucky with.
Yeah, so two completely different ways of playing. And if you think about how if you compare that to the kind of Wenger era where the approach, particularly in the last few years, was so much like, go on lads, you're good players, figure it out for yourself. To have two different tactical approaches, both of which caught Pochettino off guard, was so surprising and unusual for an Arsenal team.
I think Spurs did play right into their hands. They went again with the diamond in midfield, which worked really well against Chelsea, but it left Tottenham so exposed on the flank. Bellerin and Kolasinac had an absolute field day on the flanks. They had pretty much half the pitch unimpeded. Tottenham was sort of trying to press a Jorginho type play, which Arsenal didn't really have. And even in the second half, you see Bellerin's pass to Ramsey for the equalising goal, like Aubameyang's goal. Oh no, Aubameyang's goal, where it goes Bellerin to Ramsey, a little flick to Aubameyang. That pass from Bellerin is about 45-50 yards. All along the ground, from right back through the centre of the Tottenham midfield. That's just shouldn't be happening.
So Arsenal 4, Spurs 2. Do we think Arsenal are a team that can finish in the top four?
Yeah, I think they're a lot better than. There's a lot more talent in that team than people assumed when Wenger left. What happened in the last two or three seasons of Wenger was really, really talented players not kicking on, not improving, and not really fulfilling their potential. We're now seeing what happens when those incredibly talented and a lot of them quite expensive players actually play to their full potential. Aubameyang is top scorer in the Premier League, I think. And
10 goals, yeah.
Yeah, they're number one for sort of shot accuracy and like shot conversion. They're number one for points from losing positions, which you can't imagine. You know, a Wenger team ever you know managing that. I think they've pulled off something like 12 points from losing positions. There's a spirit to them now, and I think what we're seeing is more like their true level. And whether it's good enough for the top four, I'm not sure. It kind of depends on how Manchester United play in the second half of the season, which is why Wednesday night's game is such a big one. I think
I can't see United getting the top four now, just because they're so awful. I think Liverpool will be a comfortable second, but then I'm finding it difficult to define between Arsenal, Chelsea, and Spurs. Mm. Like Chelsea have done the best so far, but Chelsea was so incredibly bad at Wembley the other week that you do think they might have a collapse in them.
This is good though, because you know it's better if we've got a bit of intrigue in there, because there probably is going to be no intrigue in the title race.
No, I completely agree. I think City will get 100 points. Again, but yeah, I think Arsenal. I'm now feeling quite bullish about Arsenal's top four chances, having previously assumed that this would have to be a transitional season where they get fifth.
And they could, I mean, they could take a massive blow on Wednesday against Man United, which is obviously a big game. But United aren't exactly playing well themselves. Great day for the red side of North London. Great day for the red side of Merseyside. Although I understand that you two probably didn't see much of this game because you were at Arsenal Spurs. You've probably seen the goal though. The deciding goal, 96th minute with only 4 minutes added on, Jordan Pickford. He explained it as he was trying to tip it over the bar. He didn't manage to tip it over the bar. The ball bounces on top of the crossbar, comes to Divacarigi, who nods home. And you've got to say, the stadium went berserk. It was incredibly loud. I imagine most of the Merseyside supporting press box went wild. I think they needed this win. They didn't want to drop points against Everton with Man City so relentless at the top of the table. But Liverpool hold on for a bit longer in the title race, I guess.
Can I just say,
yes,
minor point, Klopp running onto the pitch,
yeah,
after the goal to celebrate with Alisson. Don't like that.
Lack of class?
No, I just think it's a guy who's totally...
Is it performative? Is it
it's slightly performative. It's a guy who's totally wrapped up in the idea of himself as an absolute legend. I think if Mourinho had done it...
What's German for absolute legend?
Yeah, there's probably a word for it. Like
I did see a lot of Wasser Baltery last night. where it was, if Jose Mourinho had done that, then the FA would ban him for 3 games.
Yeah, I mean, it is the world's kind of worst argument construction, but I do think...
It is also literally true.
But actually, that is true, because Mourinho already has racked up like 3 offences this season, like that, and that is how the FA's kind of disciplinary system works: is that the more offences you accumulate, the more likely you are. But if Mourinho had done that, I completely agree, and it's a terrible sort of way to construct an argument. But it was.
Everyone likes your passion. Everybody likes the what you bring to the game. Just behave yourself. Behave yourself.
Yeah. He has got a big case of I'm a great bloke syndrome.
Yeah.
You can tell that with his kind of like...
Name me 3 other people who have I'm a great bloke syndrome.
That's a good question.
James Corden? Is that the sort of guy you go for?
You mean like within football?
In life, in world. So people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Corden.
Jamie Oliver's really nice. Sorry.
Is like he actually?
I met Jamie Oliver. He's really nice.
Stay away from Jamie Oliver. Freddie Flintoff.
Maybe. Although the thing...
Matt Dawson.
Yeah.
Matt Dawson has great bloke syndrome. I'm a great bloke. Look at me laughing.
Yeah, this is... I think Klopp has it. I think Klopp probably has it the most, because with him it's like not misplaced. With Jake Humphrey... I think Klopp is genuinely popular and funny and charismatic and incredibly good at his job. Mm. He's kind of that is the basis for him behaving like that. But he is also like, I am very impressed with myself.
Yeah.
Look at my hilarious answer.
I don't want to name any names. Actually, I won't name any names, but a lot of football correspondents at some national newspapers, that there's at least two or three I can think of that have like great bloke syndrome.
I'm just going to prevent us getting into trouble by moving on to the next subject now. The other game on Sunday was Chelsea-Fulham, which Chelsea won 2-0 in the end. But the big game of the weekend, obviously, was Southampton 2, Man United 2, after which Jose Mourinho and Paul Pogba had an enormous row in front of the rest of the changing room that so traumatised lovely Juan Mata that he could only write a three-word blog post about how he couldn't write any blog posts. And, of course, there's nothing more shameful than not beating Manchester United at home. So Mark Hughes has been sacked by Southampton.
Breaking news, probably less breaking by the time you listen to this podcast. But, yeah, in the last sort of hour and a bit, Mark Hughes is no more in a football sense.
And it's a big time for Southampton because they also need to hire a technical director or someone to lead the footballing side of their operations. Talk of Kike Sanchez-Flores, talk of Ralf Hasenhüttl. I don't really know how to pronounce that, but I think it's like that. We're looking at a club that have now gone through, what, three or four managers in the last 18 months. They've had, you had Hughes, obviously. Before that, you had Pellegrino. Before that, you had Claude Puel. Who was before Puel?
Koeman,
crikey, yeah. So, they've gone through a few managers, and they've got worse, basically, every year, to the point that they're now kind of a team that's only just bobbing above relegation. So, if you were Southampton, is Ralf Kruger still in charge of things? I know the Chinese investment came in. If you were in charge of Southampton, what are you doing next?
I am thinking more, not just thinking about a firefighter. It's not so late in the season now that they need a kind of Allardyce-style man to save us, because that is Southampton's problem, or one of them, is that having had a clear identity a few years ago under Adkins and Pochettino and even Koeman, they're now locked into the Sunderland cycle, which is changing manager basically every year, getting someone to keep you up, trying to keep hold of them, then getting rid of them halfway through the next season and getting another firefighter in. It's no way to run a football club, and it does eventually land you up in League One. So I do think they need someone who can not just keep them up, but who they think they can build with again next year. Whether that might well be Kike Sanchez-Flores. He's a very good manager. He was unlucky to lose a job at Watford after only a year.
It just sounds like you're describing Alan Pardew.
I don't think, yeah. I mean, Pards would be exactly the wrong sort of person to get, right? Pards could maybe keep them up. There is certainly a man with I'm a great bloke syndrome.
Yeah. You need a unifier. I don't think Pardew, for all his many qualities, is that.
Given how he left Southampton last time, I guess.
Right, exactly. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of bad apples there. It's not a toxic squad. It's just an underperforming squad with a few kind of mid-range players, quite a few mediocre players. But they are good enough to stay up. There are so many poor teams in the Premier League, and Southampton really on paper shouldn't be one of them. I think you need somebody who A is going to make an instant impact, but B is going to motivate the players in a way that Mark Hughes never really has. I think, as we put it on the pod last week, a man totally without verbs. He's not a motivator. He's not a like a master tactician. He doesn't bring through youth.
He's just a guy.
Yeah, I think that probably dictates that they need it. It should be a continental appointment, yeah. Where I think a culture of moving into a place and just like doing a job in sort of 8, 12, 18 months is probably more, you know, they need a Marco Silva, essentially. And I know Marco Silva got Hull relegated, but Southampton are so much better than Hull.
I've got two questions. One of them is Sean Dyche, Eddie Howe. We talk about these guys and how they're...
Technically, those are statements.
No, because I haven't finished the question yet.
That, proper noun.
That was an interruption of a question. Sean Dyche, Eddie Howe, we talk about how British managers are probably the two best English managers right now, and they're not getting chances at the next sort of level of club up. Like Everton didn't look really at Dyche or Howe. So Southampton are kind of on the next tier of club, I guess, in terms of resources and size, stadium, everything that comes with it. So if you were Southampton, would you be tempted to go across the coast? Would you be tempted to look at someone like Sean Dyche, knowing that he's done very well with scant resources at Burnley and perhaps could do more, given a little bit more with you? Or you know, like you say, I mean, is it just something you have to go continental and go for a name which has an A or an O at the end?
I think if you're a coach worth your salt, you want to take a job in the summer. You want some building time. You want a bit of time with the players. You don't want to be... I think...
Well, interesting. That was my second question was, since when has it become so hard to hire mid-season? This feels like a very relative, very recent thing that kind of, you can only get good coaches in the summer now, whereas previously you would get some kind of seismic moves in mid-season and we're just not seeing them anymore.
Yeah, I think about half... You don't see so many of those appointments succeeding anymore. Generally, they fall into kind of the Allardyce, Moyes, Mark Hughes kind of category, where you hire a sort of a known firefighter or kind of a slightly left field, you know, like a René Meulensteen or a Bob Bradley or
Remy Gard. Legendary appointments.
Yeah, so I think if you're a coach with, like Eddie Howe, with designs on building a project at Southampton, you very definitely can, because the fundamentals of that club are very sound.
He played for Southampton, didn't he?
I think he played for Portsmouth.
Oh, Portsmouth.
He's. I think that Howe would be a better fit than Dyche. I think that Dyche's success has come with a very specifically chosen group of players who have been able to do what he wants them to do, whereas Southampton's a very different dressing room with players from all over the world, and I can't see... I don't think it would fit quite as well, particularly also with the expectations of the Saints fans and the Saints board.
Dyche has signed very well. That's been a big problem that Southampton have had. Dyche has actually signed very good players. Chris Wood, Goodmanson, what's his face? Up front.
Vokes.
Stephen Defoe.
Andre Gray.
Well, even the guys that they ended up selling on, like Michael Keane.
Yeah. Half a dozen keepers.
That's true. The other, I mean, unless you've got anything special you want to say about Southampton, just before we have to go, I was going to bring it back to Man United, because they did fail to beat Southampton. They were 2-0 down and came back from that. But what is there left to say that we haven't yet said about how boring Man United are right now?
Johnny's right. They got to bin him.
He's rubbish.
The performances have been so much worse than the results. Like, the results have been awful. Like, they're miles away. They're not going to win anything. They're going to come seventh. But the performances have been as bad as the Mourinho season. Like, but they just not lose. Like, Newcastle at home, Bournemouth away, Young Boys at home, Southampton away. These have been, like, standout stinkers week after week. And yet, the combination of like luck and the players caring more than the Chelsea players did in 2015-16, they are not doing as badly as they should do. But surely you would imagine that soon enough the results will catch up with the performances.
If they had someone who they wanted, who they actually wanted, lined up, then I think he would be toast. As it is, as we've seen, appointing in mid-season with a top four place still kind of just about reachable probably is not the wisest idea.
This is the thing, isn't it? It's what I was saying about them. It's impossible to make these big mid-season hires now. Even if you wanted, for example, Mauricio Pochettino, you couldn't go and get him now because you know that he's not going to leave Spurs halfway through a season. It would be very interesting if United did bin Mourinho and went really hard at Pochettino to see what would happen. But I think you just see Daniel Levy just pull the shutters down, right? I mean, there's just... Because there's no release clause, as far as we know, in Pochettino's contract or anything like that, it would simply be Daniel Levy just going, no.
Well, it's very possible they're already making representations through their mutual friend Alex Ferguson.
Almost certain.
Yeah. To like, hey, do you want to take over at the end of the season? I mean, I'm sure discussions like that are going on all the time.
One of the great things that Man United have to be hoping for is Santiago Solari has a good kind of second half of the season at Real Madrid. Because if Solari doesn't do that well in the second half of his season, then Real Madrid will be rivaling them. And then it gets a bit more messy, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think if Real Madrid in the hunt for a manager next summer could really shake up the entire managerial market.
Because there was that one summer when everyone changed, when Guardiola came in and when Mourinho came in. And was it Conte came in the same year?
Yeah.
where kind of the whole top six had a very different look to it, but it's been fairly stable the last couple of years. But you do feel like Jose Mourinho, this thing is not working out. I don't think they're going to turn it around from where they are. Like, he's had the windows, the transfer windows, to change the squad to make it into, you know, a couple of years ago people were saying giving time, getting the players he wants. Obviously he's a very specific sort of coach. I mean, he's been there long enough now that we expect more than this, and they're not doing more than that. Are there any other things we talked about, Premier League talking points, that you'd like to get across in the next 1 minute?
Tim Lovejoy also has I'm a Great Bloke syndrome.
That's a very good shout from you.
A lot of cricketers have it as well.
Graham Swann.
Great.
I think Graham Swann probably has more of it than anyone else alive, apart from Jurgen Klopp.
I like Swanny. I shouldn't like Swanny, but I do.
And on that note, we will end the Indie Football Podcast for this week. By the time you listen to this podcast, we may or may not have won several awards between us. Most likely not. We may or may not have England with a brilliant semi-finals draw in the Nations League. We may or may not have a government in place still. Who knows? But all I know is that I'd like to thank Jack Brooke for coming today.
Thank you, Ed, for having me.
I'd like to thank Jonathan Liu for coming today.
You're welcome.
And I'd like to wish you both the best of luck tonight. By the way, still we currently haven't got a sponsor, you might have noticed, but we are getting nominated for awards. So if you're rich or own a company, then just like hit me up. I'm sure we can come to some sort of deal. Bring me the cash. Until next time, this has been the Indie Football Podcast. Please rate, review and subscribe. My name is Ben Mallion. Thank you and goodbye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.